Welcome to the Veterans Voices Podcast, recorded in the Blue Falcon's Nest, a previously undisclosed location somewhere in the recently declassified Cold War era underground bunkers 50 meters below the Lone Star College Montgomery Duck Pond, in front of a live audience of 100 ROTC cadets standing silently at attention. Thanks for joining us. Let's get to it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Veterans Voices Podcast. We have a very special guest today, Miss Emily.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so glad that you're joining us today, and I really appreciate you coming and telling us your story. It's going to be a very powerful story, and I'm looking forward to talking about it with you. So how about we start at the beginning? Let's talk about your time in Galveston as a young woman.
Yes, okay, and I just want to give a little disclaimer here. My story is very tragic. I've been through a lot of things that none of us ever want to go through, but let's remember that this is a happy ending to my story.
All right.
So although this is going to be some really graphic and disturbing material, I am a successful person. I am the victor here, okay? So I have overcome, and so telling my story becomes easier over the years. Especially now that I have, I've really just achieved a lot of things people said I would never be able to do. So every time we check off one of those nevers, I realize anything is possible. What is next? And we keep on moving forward. And so, although my story is tragic, I just want everyone to know that there is a very happy ending to all of this. And we are living it right now, me being here with you today. Also, just want to say that I did not have a positive military experience. I am not in any way saying that I dislike or am not loyal to the United States military. My experience is my experience. And I just sent my oldest child to boot camp on Monday.
Oh, no.
So he is there right now wondering what the heck mom talked him into now.
Yeah. Which branch did he choose?
He chose National Guard. So basically we were having, I'm a single mom of four. So I was having a hard time paying for his college. He wanted to go to a private college. And I was about ready to just go completely poor into debt to put him through this private college, but it just didn't, nothing was working out. And I just realized that, like, this kid, all he does is work out and go to school. That's all he likes to do. So, like, let's put that to use. You can go to the National Guard, you'll get all your workouts in,
yeah.
Then you get to come home and go to school and be paid to go to school. And then if you love the military, then later you can go in with some rank, which was, I knew nothing about any of this entering the military, but I knew this was a good way that it could set him up for his future family, his future children, and I wouldn't be footing the bill. So right. He went for it.
That's good, and I'm glad you bring up that point, because I think there's a perception amongst the public that we all have a good time in the military, or, you know, maybe even, you know, basic training is hard, but after that, and a couple of our guests have alluded to they didn't have a good time, but I think you're going to be our first one to really head on open the curtain on what some people's experiences are.
Definitely.
And it's fortunate your son had your background and your experience, because one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is, sounds like your recruiter was not the greatest recruiter of all time, but we'll get
definitely get to that. Okay, so starting in Galveston. So I ended up in Galveston because my parents were a married middle-class couple, a couple of narcissists, and both of them were trying to get famous in their own rights. So I grew up on a Christian television show.
Really?
Yes. And then suddenly my mother left because she felt like she was famous. My father left, and all of my sisters and I were kind of left to either go with mom or dad. One of my sisters was adopted by another family. My parents were very abusive. So it was a very bad childhood, and I found myself at 13 trying to decide the lesser of two evils to go live with, and basically ended up in the streets, like living with other friends until I was about 17. And then I met a man in Galveston that I just fell so in love with, and he was, he is half black, half Asian. And this was in the early 2000s. So when I got into a biracial relationship, it was not an accepted situation. So my parents completely disowned me all the way. I had no family. So I ended up living with that guy in Galveston in the projects. So it was a pretty shocking change for me, but I am a very adaptable person. So I, even though I was the only white girl in the whole area, I just didn't see myself that way, and I blended in, and life was very difficult. So, I mean, I was selling drugs to survive, and at a very young age. And got pregnant at 19 with my first child. And basically, I was just going down a really bad path. I mean, the only people around me were also desperate in their situations. And I did my best to provide for my family, but life got very dangerous. And whenever my son was 3 years old, he told me that he did not want to grow up and be a drunk dad. And I realized in that moment that that was all he had seen.
Yeah.
And so I went to the mall and walked into a recruiter's office and asked them what was going on with the military. And I chose the Army because I felt like I would look the best in that outfit. So after I chose Army based on the outfit, the recruiter started talking to me, and I told him I was a single mom. He knew I was from a bad area just from even the way I spoke and dressed. I mean, it was very right. clear. And I told him I wanted to change our situation. And the recruiter, he didn't tell me very much. He said that I would always have my house paid for. I would make tons of money. I would be able to choose my job and where I go. And my son could come with me. And he sold me a really nice dream, especially for someone who's living in a house that's almost condemned.
Yeah, it almost feels, I don't want to say predatory, but it almost feels predatory of like, okay, here's somebody in poverty, here's somebody in a bad situation.
That's exactly right.
Let me see what needs that she's missing and promise those things.
Yeah, and he was very active in like, okay, here's your list of things you need to do. I had dropped out of high school my senior year, although I could have graduated, kind of just gave up on school and moved to Mexico for a few months to party. So that was an interesting situation, but I still needed like my GED. So he had like a list. We're going to get your GED test taken. You have physical, you have this appointments. Like, he's scheduling everything. He's taking me to everything. And then right at the end, he tells me, well, there's one more problem for you to go to active duty. You're a single mom, so you have to be married. So who do you know that you can marry?
So I have to ask, because you met this person and I did not, do you think it was actually something that he forgot about or something he hadn't considered until the very end of the process? Or do you think he knew the whole time it was going to be an issue, but he wanted to get you invested into the process and wait till you had done 99% of the work and the effort and then decided to spring it on you, thinking that you'd already gone this far, that you'd probably do pretty much anything to do that last final step?
This was absolutely his plan. He knew my situation very well because he was picking me up in the hood every day to go do something to prepare to go to boot camp. So on hindsight, like, he absolutely knew what he was doing. And so the ethical issues that I have here, I did not notice back then because I was a desperate person, right, thinking this person was saving me.
And on the surface, it looks like he's helping you.
Absolutely. It totally did. With the marriage, he was like, well, just tell the baby's daddy to marry you and he'll get money. And let me talk to him because I can tell him about all the benefits involved with being married to a service member. And the father of my child was like, not interested. In fact, he was jealous that I was going to go. So his goal was to stop me.
Right.
From going. So he was out, and I told the recruiter, and I was kind of kind of defeated. I was like, well, you won't do it, you know. I guess we can't do this. And he said no, and he got out his phone, because that was before everyone had cell phones. Just most people, not me.
Right.
Let's call all your friends. And literally, the only person that would marry me was a friend of mine, like an acquaintance, who happened to be a drag queen. And he said yes. And the recruiter talked to him about all the medical benefits. And, I mean, he sold it to my friend as well. And so he also stood in as the witness to our wedding.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the gall of this person to... And it's obvious probably now in hindsight that he was just looking out for himself.
Absolutely. It was all numbers for him.
Right. So he wasn't going to factor in how was this going to interfere with your life or impact your life or your friend's life or your son's life. It was just, I need another number on my enlistment chart of how many. In my day, I'm not sure if it's still the case. In the 90s, the recruiters had an unofficial motto. It was meet your mission. The mission was you had to recruit 2 people a month back then. Meet your mission, go fishing. Mm-hmm. Which meant once they got the 2 people a month, then they could just do nothing the rest of the month. And I think there's that factor. And I think there's also, if any student veterans were recruiters, you can email me your angry email and come on the podcast. But another thing I think happens is there's tremendous pressure on them. If they don't get that 2, then there's consequences. So I don't, and again, you met the person I didn't. I wonder if it was, he was a malicious person or if he was also in a bad situation that he had to navigate through. I mean, that doesn't excuse his behavior by any means, but I just sometimes I like to look and like, why did they do this?
Right. I do think he was a malicious person just because my later in life ran into him a couple times, and he was definitely interested in an inappropriate relationship with me. Mm. So back then, I did not have the same mindset and experience I have now, right? So back then, I thought it was just because I was cute, but I really don't believe that it was just because I was cute. It was because I was vulnerable. Right. I was the one who was willing to marry someone that I barely knew to enter the military. And that really meant a lot for my son as well. Because me going in active duty, now that means that he can't come with me right away. And someone has to keep him during all my training. And then I have to get a lot of paperwork done to get him to my first duty station. So it didn't really support my son while I was in training by doing it this way. But the recruiter, he knew those things, and he did not tell me. And just based on his just the way that he behaved every time I saw him afterwards, he was a predator.
Okay.
And that was my experience in the military. It started that way, and it finished that way. So, I mean, I was a vulnerable person. I needed help, and I also was really very cute. Well, I mean, it means a little something once you get in there, and I think other service members will know, you know, especially back in my day, in the early 2000s, not a lot of girls were enlisting, and the hot girls stood out, and I was definitely a hot girl. But I paid for it, I'm telling you, because he tricked me into getting married and going off. And I mean, I was out immediately. Like after that marriage ceremony, I think I was at MEPS like 2 days later. Wow. And on the bus to boot camp. In fact, when the bus pulled up to boot camp, so mind you, this guy has sold me a dream. He has taken me to these appointments. He has stood in at my wedding and put me on this bus. I never really knew what I signed up for. Never. So when the bus pulled up to boot camp and the drill sergeants get on, it's the middle of the night and they're yelling at everybody to get off the bus. I just stayed in my seat. And then they're like yelling at me like, Private, get up, get up. What is wrong with you? And I was like, excuse me, I'm sorry. I've gotten on the wrong bus. Yeah. This is not where I wanted to go.
Yeah. Probably a lot of us feel that way, but probably especially you.
Well, I definitely said something, and I paid for it. So they made me get off the bus, and it was such a culture shock. I mean, I'm sure it is for everyone. Hopefully my son is doing better than I was.
You probably prepared him for
it. I did. We talked a lot. We talked a lot about the environment he would be in. I, on the other hand, was totally in shock. And going through the lines that first week at reception, I was trying to figure out how to leave. And so I even faked an injury while we were marching to one place and got my ankle wrapped up and got some crutches and got to be with the holdovers. And then I started talking to the holdovers. How long have you been waiting to leave? 9 months.
Right.
12 months. I should be gone by the end of the year. And then in that moment, I realized, oh, no. I want 10 weeks is a lot better.
Yeah, holdover platoon is not the place to be. It's funny you bring, I'm glad you brought that up in case any of my students listen, because in my class, I'll talk about the holdover platoon, because sometimes people or students will come here and they'll like, oh, you know what, instead of going to class, I'll just do this. Or instead of, you know, maybe I can avoid it. There's no way to avoid it. The fastest way through, and I use basic training as an example, the fastest way through basic training is to graduate. You know,
yes.
Act like you're hurt. Or act like
that
you're...
is right. I lost a week acting like I was hurt. But then I realized, like, this is the quickest way through it, just like you said. And suddenly, miraculously, my ankle was fine. And I started boot camp. So it was like, so the first week was the reception and my fake injury. And then I got put with my with my platoon. And I would say, like, within the first week, the drill sergeant told me to come to his office and that he was going to let me have a phone call because he had noticed I hadn't had any phone calls. And he sexually assaulted me and in his office. And that never stopped the entire boot camp, even one time in the field. And he coerced me with his power. He promised me special privileges like phone calls or candy. I mean, it was, and you would think, like, in the real world, like, no man is going to offer me Skittles and I'm going to fall for it.
Well, the basic training, though, I mean, they deprive, in my time, I don't think I had any sugar.
No, me there. Neither. Me neither. And so I was under the impression that this is what I've signed up for. That I realized I was a target to the recruiter at that time. Like, I realized, like, he was not honest with me. Right. And then when I got to basic and the drill sergeant started very regularly assaulting me, I realized that I kind of felt like this was what I'm in for the rest of my time. And I was right. The drill sergeant that did those things to me, he had another holdover pregnant, and there have been several cases that have been brought against him. So I'm not sure what his current status is now.
You don't know if he ever faced justice or?
I do not know. I think he probably did, because when I was leaving AIT, I found out that he was under an investigation, and I did not speak up until I'd been out of the military for 15 years.
And some people might not understand why. And it's, I think, a culture in the military of, if there's a problem in the platoon, you keep it in the platoon. You don't go. And the thing is, that gets twisted and that gets abused, because, I mean, in certain situations, that's what you want to do. If somebody's late for formation, you don't go tell the battalion commander. You know, you handle it local and in-house. But that leaves everyone open to danger, in that I'm going to do something I'm not even supposed to do. I'm going to do something illegal or something harmful because I know they're not going to talk to anybody.
That's right. That opportunity in what I saw with the leadership, that they can take the opportunity to do things. And, you know, I did not feel anyone would listen to me. And I also was kind of degraded all the time by that drill sergeant, especially, like, he would assault me in his office in the night. And then the next morning at PT, he would degrade me in front of the other troops, like, you know, screaming at me extra, making me do extra push-ups. And it was definitely very difficult for me to just decipher, like, what was actually going on here, you know?
Right.
So it was actually hell.
Yeah, I would imagine. And I think another thing they take advantage of is the mindset of a private in basic training is, right, is you have no power. You can't speak up. You can't contest things, you know, like me and my, of course, I probably don't need to say this. My experience is nothing near yours, so I'm not trying to compare experiences. But when I think of when I was there, if somebody had just done anything unfair to me, I don't think I could have said anything.
No.
Like probably the most unfair thing that happened to me, and everybody's going to roll their eyes, was one of the drill sergeants kept confusing me with this other kid with the same name and the same Coke bottle BCG glasses. And one time he got mad at the other kid, and he told the house mouse, like, yeah, give Ferguson KP tomorrow. But he meant to say give Free Lou KP tomorrow. So, like, that was the worst thing that happened to me. But when it happened, I knew what was going on. But I didn't, like, go knock on his door and be like, hey, what's going on? Why are you giving me KP? I was just like, okay.
You just did it, right?
So I think that's a place where perhaps, and I don't want to say everybody there is a predator, but that seems like a place where a predator would thrive.
That's right. I mean, especially prior to, you know, now the military's done a lot to recognize military sexual trauma. And so they are trying to empower the women to say no and to speak up when something's happened to them. But realistically, we're in an environment where, you know, the military is your family, right? You're not supposed to tell anybody outside of them.
Right.
And rank is everything. And, you know, if you do speak up, maybe you'll be, you know, everyone will go against you, including your own friends, your battle buddies. You know, like, it's a situation where they can thrive. A predator can thrive.
Because a lot of things are set up, a lot of things, I think, are set up so that we will function in an emergency or function in a combat zone of, you don't question the leadership and you don't do things that would hurt your buddies. You don't do all these things. And that's what you want when you're in a dangerous situation. But also a bad person could twist those things and manipulate those things for their own benefit.
Yeah, and maybe not even so much just a bad person, just a person that had a bad idea, you know, because, like, you're going to get away with it. I experienced so much sexual assault in the military that I began to think, like, is it me that's causing this? Because this isn't happening to every other girl at every duty station, because this did not stop in basic training for me. I went to AIT. I thought I was safe. I was human resources, so I'm, like, on the computer at school every day. And a couple weeks in, there was a fight between two troops that were, like, in my same room in the barracks.
Yeah.
And so I went to break up the fight, and I pulled the girl that was on top of the other girl off, and I kind of was choking her. I had her in a headlock, but she was, like, ripping at this other girl. Yeah. So I probably squeezed her neck a little hard and breaking up the fight. Also, I'm super strong, guys. I just came out of boot camp, you know? Yeah. And so I think she was kind of choking, and she turned her head and bit my chest. And it was very bad, like,
oh, no.
Very, very bad. And so the commander called us in his office, and although I was just breaking up the fight, I wasn't in trouble, he asked me if I was hurt, and I told him, like, my chest is covered in black bruises and, like, teeth marks. And I was the only one in talking to him about what had happened. And he came over and was like, let me see. And sexually assaulted me. And that commander, he did my whole AIT. And then even after I graduated AIT and I went home on leave for like a week. And then I came back to that station to get shipped off to my first duty station in Germany. That commander put me in a hotel that he paid for a week and put off me leaving. So he came to that hotel every night. And at that point I knew this is wrong, but I did not know who I could tell. What had just happened to me in boot camp told me that, like, this is what's going to happen. Like, the commands are going to take what they want from you. And at that point I was absolutely terrified, because it was nonstop for me.
It seems like a failure on the side of the Army. I mean, there's many here, but I do remember a part of basic training in the classroom part was unlawful orders. Like, don't follow orders that are unlawful. If your squad leader tells you to go to a village and kill a bunch of civilians, you don't do it, and there's no consequences. I don't know why in that lesson they can't include, okay, here's some examples of unlawful orders in the barracks.
Right. And, you know, I hope that they do now, because I did just have that class in reception. They kind of go over all of that. But then when I come out of reception and the drill sergeant is like, come in my office, I'm going to give you a break, come on. And you go in there and then they assault you. Well, I mean, was I supposed to say don't come in the office? Am I never supposed to go to an office? I mean, it made it very blurry lines of when I was safe, when what they were telling me was going to be an actual military order, or if it was going to be them trying to get me alone so that they could hurt me. And so it was, I just continuously ran into the same situation. And I became very, very desperate, just like I was desperate to get in. And we went through desperate measures. Right. After I got to Germany, I was so afraid, especially because culture shock hit me. Getting into, right when I got off the plane in Germany and realized there is no English here. I freaked out. Like, and then I felt like, oh my gosh, they've sent me somewhere where no one even can speak English. Like, yeah. I am in so much danger. And I'll tell you, in Germany, I was not assaulted in the same way. But soldiers kind of did take advantage of me. An occurrence happened where I had been taken advantage of by three soldiers, and they left me somewhere I wasn't familiar with in Germany. And when I made it to a formation the next morning late to PT formation, I ran up to tell the drill sergeant. She wasn't my normal sergeant. We were actually in training in Grafenwehr doing postal training. So I was under leaders that weren't my normal leaders.
So you were just out of school.
Right. We were out of school. And so I ran up to this, she was an E7, to tell her what had happened to me. I was still very groggy. I was still in my civilian clothes. And she told me to get down and beat my face for being late to her formation. And I am crying. And I was trying to get her to listen to me. And she would not. And so she pushed me. And then there was a little scuffle. And but I was trying to get help, you know, right. Like I had been hurt, and then I ended up in a fight. And
yeah, and I would imagine, you tell me if this is right or wrong, you probably would have expected a female leader.
Absolutely, I did. I mean, I'd never been late before. I wasn't some soldier that was always getting into trouble, you know, and I was clearly in my clothes from the, like, my civilian clothes had to be from the night before. It was very obvious that something had happened to me. And then after the assault happened, now I did defend myself. So then it just looked like there was a fight between myself and an E7, and I was like a fuzzy patch, okay? Okay. So I got, like, I couldn't leave the barracks for the rest of postal training, but they never took any court action against me.
Okay. I wonder if they followed up and had a secret conversation with the E7, pointing out her mistakes, and said, if you press charges, it's going to...
I don't know, because no one had even heard what I had been going through.
Right.
So maybe potentially for her assaulting me in civilian clothes in front of everyone, they dropped it. But in the real world, I'm still needing help. I had just been raped by three people. And that she knew that I did not know, that people that were part of the school, that, like, let's all go out. And it turned into something very ugly and violent and dangerous for me. And I was not helped. I was fought. So from that moment, I knew that I needed to get out. That was the only way that I was going to survive.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So me being human resources, I focused my attention on trying to find a way out, a loophole.
So they probably spent a lot of time teaching you how people get out, and then you used it.
They spent less time teaching it to me, but they did show me where to find the information.
Okay.
And I've always been just, if I want to know something, I will find it out. I will learn it. Yeah. So I looked for that information and found that if I were pregnant, I could get out with an honorable discharge, and be sent home. So I went home on leave to get my son finally, who was three. Almost four at the time.
How long have you been apart from him at this point?
At this point, about 8 months. Oh. Yeah. So I came back to Galveston. He was in a very dangerous situation. I mean, he was still in that same hood that I worked to get us out of.
Yeah.
Without mom. So it was a very, very dangerous place for him. And whenever I did come home to get him, I told his dad, like, okay, here's what we're doing. I need to go back pregnant. And I did. I went back pregnant. So when I got back to Germany, they were actually about to deploy my unit. And so we were going to all these checkups and going to get our physicals for deployment. And I knew I was pregnant, but I didn't say anything. And then they came back and said, oh, you're pregnant. And then I experienced a lot of pressure to not be pregnant anymore. And what was I going to do with the baby? Like, 6 weeks after you have the baby, we're going to deploy you. You're going to have to get someone in Germany to stay with your newborn. But they were kind of like scaring me, but they didn't know I had done this all on purpose.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, can I get out? Isn't there a family chapter? You know, and I brought it up, and so then I started the chapter. So I was in the military a little bit under 2 years because it was a constant fight to get out for me. And when I got sent home, I was almost 9 months pregnant, and they didn't tell me anything. They put me on a plane, and I had no idea that I would have any help from the military ever again. And because of my trauma, I was like, see you later, you know? So
yeah.
That led to just a terrible downfall in my life. You know, I come out of the situation where I have been used and objectified the entire time. And then I come home. Now, mind you, okay, so when I came home, Galveston was no longer there because right before I flew home, Hurricane Rita came through.
Yeah.
And so the home we had that was barely standing as it is gone. Galveston is like closed. So in addition to me not knowing what to do and being pregnant, I had no home. I had nowhere to go. And it just, I just really went into a very dark place. And I had kind of a psychotic break, and I ended up losing custody of my son and my daughter as soon as I had her. So, and that just started a really bad cycle for me where I continued to believe those things about me, that I would show up somewhere and men were going to do this to me anyway, so you might as well do it first, you know. And I got into a lot of things that that just continued to put me in dangerous situations and continued to put me in the same cycle of victimization. So, like, stripping and working in that industry really took over my life, and things spiraled until I was kidnapped in 2015. By a serial predator. He had been stalking me at a couple places I bartended. I had no idea. And then one day I went to the park to take my son to go play basketball. Now, I didn't have custody, but I was still very much involved in my children's lives. And I had always taken him once a week to the same park to play basketball. So then I meet this amazing man at the basketball park, and he lures me through. We talked for a little while, and then he lures me to his house for a date, and I was kidnapped and beaten and held against my will for 3 weeks. I was able to escape, and I went to my mom's house and was there with my children, and I finally told her what had happened to me. And then 2 weeks later, he kidnapped me out of the parking lot of those apartments and kept me for 88 days in a vacant apartment in Richmond, Texas. And I was able to escape on the 88th day because he was being evicted from this apartment situation, and the cops were gonna come the next day. I was unaware, but I got out. And so my mom picked me up, and I immediately went to the hospital, and all my ribs were broken, all the bones in my face were broken, fingers broken, head shaved in parts. I was tortured. And then I found out that I was pregnant. So that situation, surviving that, was definitely life-changing. Yeah. I was kind of like a newborn baby. I didn't want to do anything I used to do. I didn't believe anything I used to believe. And I was agoraphobic for almost an entire year. But eventually I realized that, like, and I was also in the process of him being convicted for this. So he got arrested, the bad guy. And then witness protection moved our family. And we waited 5 years for him to go to trial. In that time, 9 other women came forward. So he was a serial rapist. And I got to see him be convicted of the crime that he committed against the crimes. He only got 13 years. But after COVID, they let him out.
No.
Yeah. And they didn't tell me. So in those years that I was awaiting trial, wonderful things happened for me because I completely changed and my outlook changed. And part of the reason was because, like, after I was saved from that, nobody came to, like, really save me. Like, I was just a broken person, you know? And I'm looking up at my kids who the world said I would never get custody of them again. But I'm looking at them like, I'm all you guys have to look to, and nobody's coming to save me. So when I realized that I was the hero of the story, everything changed. Everything. And so I started to fight for everything. I got my kids back. I started several businesses that became successful enough to help us to get away from living with my mom. And, you know, life was good 3 years ago. No, almost 4 years ago, we moved out to the Woodlands. My small business started blowing up. I do, like, custom t-shirts, embroidery, and anything you want, I can make it.
Yeah, that seems like a doubly good thing. It's financially good, but it seems like an outlet.
Yes,
yeah, a creative outlet.
That's right. So I could, and I was in, like, the restaurant industry before and so many other service type industries, cash type industries, you know, and I knew I could not do that anymore because now I'm scared of people. I was scared of everything. So that's how it started. My sister had a marketing company, and she was like, hey, you know, you don't go anywhere. Ha ha. Would you like to help me do these graphics? And so she slowly started teaching me graphic design, and then I liked it. So I spent time on YouTube Academy and got better and better, right, and ended up being an executive at the marketing firm, and then starting my own little businesses. And you're right, that creative outlet for me was very, very healing. And it's still a huge part of my life. I'm still doing it. And so that all like saved me, right? So I knew that looking back at the military, it was just a bad experience at that time. Still, like, that sucked. I won't do it again. I learned a lot. But when my son, who at the time was 17, wanted to do dual credit here at Lone Star, and y'all, I'm a single mom of four. I'm doing the homeschool thing because I'm scared of people. Remember, so nobody's gone to school since I got since 2016. I'm homeschooling, like, we're staying safe. And he wanted to go to Lone Star for dual credit. And so I figure things out, y'all. One of the things I figured out in life is do the paperwork. Because so many things are just like, if you would have just done that paperwork. So I was like diving in. I'm going to get him into dual credit. Mind you, I'm still a high school dropout, guys. And I did the work and I figured it out. And then he loved it. He excelled. And then I knew the following year he needed to enter as a college student. And he's not the brightest he's very smart and talented, but, like, he doesn't understand, like, this scholarship will help with this, or grants will cover this. Like, it was too much for him. Yeah. And I was like, how am I going to get him through college? And I don't know anything. So, like, if I went, I would know all the things. We would do so well.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine was like, why don't you go? And no one in my entire life had told me, why didn't you go to college? No one ever. a friend of mine this late in my life tells me, you should really go. You're very smart. You should do it. And I was like, I don't know. We'll see. So I signed up for an orientation and came here. And whenever I went in, they were like, but all the veterans come with us. And the lady was like, are you a veteran? And I was like, kind of. She's like, what does kind of mean? I was like, well, I didn't do my full 4 years and it was a bad experience. So I just, no, I'm not a veteran. And she was like, oh, you are a veteran.
Yeah.
And she said, I said, well, I barely stayed in. I worked to get out. I was really trying to get out. And she was like, it matters. Come with me. And that day I found out that all the school would be paid for, that I would be paid to go to school. And I was blown away. So in my life, when things happen like that, that means you are supposed to be doing it.
Right.
So I jumped in, and it has been the most transformative experience of my life, even more than almost dying, even more than, you know, marking all these nevers off my list. You'll never have a kid. You'll never be anything. All these things. Going to school was what really changed everything for us. Everything. And our family is big on school now.
That's incredible. And I wonder about, you said your son is smart, but I wonder if just you are probably super intelligent, just nobody told you that. You know, nobody encouraged that. Nobody watered that plant.
That's exactly right. Nobody told me. And when people did talk about college to me, it would be like, ah, don't waste your time. That girl over there, waiting tables at the same place I am, right? She's got a bachelor's degree and she's working here. And I'm like, well, I already work here and I make more than her. You know, so. Yeah.
Was that true though? Do you think that was true, or do you think?
You know, I definitely think it was true. I know a lot of my friends' kids have bachelor's degrees and are doing things like that. But, you know, like, no judgment. I also understand the power of when you really want something, how you get it. So, right. I mean, like, I feel like, you know, maybe they're taking some time, but
it could be because a bachelor's degree alone isn't going to do it for you. You need a bachelor's degree and some gumption and some motivation.
You can't
motivation.
Tell me that. I'm getting the associates, and right now I'm like ready to run for president. People cannot tell me anything. I walk around with Harvard Law School shirts on all the time, and they're like, you're going to Harvard? Yes, I am. Yes, I am going. And that is the dream. I want to get into Harvard Law School. Because guess what? I started school, and I'm a freaking rock star. Perfect 4.0. This whole time, all these kids, and it's been right at a year that I started at Lone Star, and I'll graduate in May.
I almost wonder if people saw that in you and wanted to discourage it, because you ever notice if you see like crabs in a bucket, and one of the crabs will start getting out of the bucket, and like they'll get their little claw on the rim, and do you notice what happens?
Yes, and they put them back in the bucket.
Yeah, the other crabs grab them and pull them back down. The other crabs don't help them and push them up, you know. And are humans that different? Maybe they saw you. They saw an intelligence in you. They saw just something in you, and they're like, oh, you know what? No, that's going to make me look bad, or I'm just going to pull her back down.
You know, that's probably exactly what was happening here, because all the people that, when I did start school, they were like, oh, I don't know how you're going to do it. How do you have time? You've got all those kids. You've got to work too, you know, and they did not say positive things. In fact, my father told me, Emily, if you get a 3.0, I'm going to be so proud of you. But don't try too hard. Like, you've got to make your money and all this stuff. Look, we have not broke a sweat. We've got a 4.0. I'm trying to get the commencement speech right now. And you know, I've been accepted into SAM 3 times, but I love Lone Star so much that I was like, no, I'm just going to graduate. I'll start SAM in the summer. And every single professor has written me a letter of recommendation. Every professor has told me, you can go to Harvard, Emily. You really can do it. They say your story alone will get you. So, I mean, like, the hope that I've gotten here is huge. And also just like unlocking a part of my brain that I wasn't using. It's been monumental to me.
That makes me really happy to hear that. People probably think I'm biased because I work here, but you know, I wouldn't work here if I did if I didn't believe in it. And but also, I was a Lone Star College student also. And when you said I got accepted to SAM and didn't go, I 100% understand that. And again, I might be biased because I work here and I went here. But when I did finally go, because when I was at Lone Star, I was like, oh, I can't wait till I get to A&M. I can't wait. Yeah. And then I got there, I was like, Lone Star is better than this. I got to A&M and the professors didn't know who I was.
That's my fear. I'm just going to be one of everybody.
But I don't know. There was some advantage to it. I don't even know what the product was, but I saw a commercial once. It was one of these university classrooms, and there's the big auditorium where like 300 students, and they're all taking a final exam, and they're writing in their blue books, and the professor in the front says, "Okay, time's up," and one guy just keeps writing, and other students are filing down and putting their blue books on his desk as they file out. It's hundreds of students, and the other guy is still writing. The professor's like, "Your time is up. Your time is up." And the guy keeps writing, and then finally the guy decides he's done writing, and he makes his way down to the desk, and the professor says, "No, that's you get an F on this exam. You know, you went over the time," and the student kind of bows up and goes, "Do you have any idea who I am?" And the professor's like, "I don't know who you are." And he goes, "Okay." And then he slides his test in the middle of the stack and walks off.
Yeah.
So I didn't care for that as much as, you know, and I did miss Lone Star. And I even did this, and I'll throw an idea in your head, is even in the summers, sometimes I would still take a class at Lone Star as an A&M student because.
Yeah, somebody told me I could do that recently. I'm right there with you. I thought I was really special here. And I think it's because, like, one of my favorite teachers, Dr. Irv Lichman, he's my first psychology teacher. He would call me a non-traditional student. And I thought it was because I was so unique and special. It wasn't until the next class that a teacher referred to me as a non-traditional student that I thought, man, that's a very catchy phrase. They must all say that about me.
Well, we had a meeting about you.
And then Gail told me she was a non-traditional student. Yeah. And I was like, hold on. Does this mean I'm old? It means I'm old. This whole time I'm thinking I'm special.
Well, that's part of it. Multiple things go into the definition. Yeah.
I tried to, you know, I really actually tried to fit in very well and quietly with the other students. But that I only can get so far before the me starts coming out. But they've all been so great. So when I did a mock trial in Dr. Chapman's class, and I was the prosecutor, and I dressed in a wig and a power suit and looked like Nancy Grace. They loved it. That's so much support.
I bet. And this is kind of, and you beat me to it. I go into what could we do at Lone Star? What could we do better? How could we help you more?
So I have a few things about the veterans, the people that help the veterans here that aren't as great. And that's just because, like, my first semester, I was not aware that if I didn't take one class in person, that it would affect my housing stipend, okay? Hmm. So I was not told that, and I took my first semester of all online classes. And so it cost me a lot of money.
Right.
So that was not optimal. But at the same time, let's remember that I didn't know I was going to get anything for going to school. So I was like, yeah, you know, it's still awesome. But it could have been better. So that was an issue. And then I've recently, when I was going to go to SAM this semester, and I didn't at the last minute, I stayed here. And I recently got some advising that was not accurate. So that wasn't good. So basically, a veterans advisor told me that. So I know I've bragged about my 4.0, but I still have to take the math with the dummy class with it. The NCBO, not dummy, but I'm taking it, whatever. And I asked her, like, will this class count for my 12 hours? Will it count for my BAH for full-time student? And she said, yes. And I was like, I feel like it's not. And we kind of went back and forth. She was like, you're good. Well, it doesn't. So fortunately, I kind of knew she was wrong, and at the last minute, I added another class.
Okay.
So, but that was, and then that same lady, she forgot to remind me to recertify since I was staying here.
Right.
And they have emailed me and said, you've been here before, so you should have known. So I get it. I'm new to this. I'm not supposed to make those mistakes. But a reminder would have been really helpful, because now I'm like 2 months behind not getting my money.
Yeah.
But guess what? The veterans are so awesome here. When I leave here, I'm going to pick up a check from them.
Really?
Yes, because basically in my last, you know, as I'm doing all these rock star things, life is still happening, right? So like in the last month before Christmas, my estranged sister had a drug overdose, and I ended up having to take in her abused autistic 3-year-old right at the holidays. And then somebody breached a contract with me and stole a lot of money from me. So I'm going through all this stuff, and everything hit me at once. I'm feeding an extra child. All my time's going into this. I'm doing my finals for school, and then I'm having a huge problem in my business. So basically I just started clicking on anything for help online. And they came back, and they're able to help me. So today they're going to get me out of the woods. And I mean, it's such a blessing, like seriously. And I don't think that everyone knows that there's resources, but I do think that they need to know that they're like...
Right. You said earlier that they came out and said all the veterans come with us.
Yes.
Was that some kind of a orientation?
Yeah, it was an orientation.
So was it short, or was it like this stuff could have been included in it?
What happened that day was great. I mean, I think that they were just giving me a lot of information. I probably could have been, if I would have known more about my benefits and what I was eligible for, I don't think we would have had the same problem. I was kind of shell-shocked, like, I'm really getting help?
Yeah.
Are y'all sure I'm in the right place? So that situation could have easily just been me confused.
After all your previous experiences, I don't understand why help would be confusing or even that you'd be suspicious of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I absolutely thought that the military would never do anything for me, and I was so wrong. And so these are things that veteran students need to know. You know, I think that we should be aware of that each veteran has a different experience, and they're not all positive.
Right.
One thing I do know across the board is that no matter how good your platoon is and your battalion is, when you leave, you are not aware of what you are entitled to.
Right.
You're not. And also, everyone should be getting disability. If you did time in the military, you should be getting disability. They messed you up. You need to figure out how.
All right.
That's good. My newest thing I've learned. I've been doing a lot of paperwork with the VA. They're coming back. They're supporting me 100% and helping me get compensation for the military sexual trauma that I experienced.
And I remember that one thing that is different about most of the VA services is the MST services. You don't have to be disability rated. You don't have to have been in a combat zone. Just if you were in the military at all and suffered from MST, then they got services for you. So, I mean, it sounds like you already knew that, but when you mentioned it, I thought maybe we should tell the listeners.
Well, I didn't know until the last year.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, basically when Lone Star showed me that I am a veteran, regardless of my experience, and that I'm entitled to benefits, that's all you had to tell me. Then I'm looking for what else do y'all owe me.
Right. And that's the way you got to be. You can't just assume that you will or won't get services from the government.
Yeah, and I think that veterans coming out, they do think that this is all. That's all you get. They don't know the possibilities. And also, I think that there's a lot of shock re-entering civilian life and not knowing who you are anymore. I mean, you know, they instilled that in us. So all that combined, veterans need to know, like, yes, you know, if you were honorably discharged for sure, then there's a lot of help for you. And you just have to go get it. And that's kind of like my whole thing in life. Like, yes, you can survive things. You can achieve. You have to go get it. Do the paperwork. Fight the fight. You know, do the monotonous tasks, whatever it takes. But that's my experience with the VA. You put the paperwork in. That's pretty much like get that ball rolling.
Okay, good. And then always like to finish with a final word.
Final word is that you are the hero of your story, no matter where you came from or where you want to go, and no one is showing up to save the day. So if you want your narrative to change, then it is on you. You pick up that sword and you fight. You decide what you want in life and you can get it, knowing that you are the one who's responsible for it. And once you do that, people are going to be so receptive. People love to see someone working hard for a goal or believing that they can be something that the world said that they could never be. So that's like my mantra, is like, you know, it's all up to you. And so when I realized that, it changed my life, and I hope that other people will realize that too and be the hero.
Incredible story. Thank you for coming. I'm truly grateful for you being here.
Aww, and sharing your time. All right, shout out to Chapman. Dr. Chapman.
Any other shout outs?
Yeah, Dr. Witten, Dr. Chapman, Professor Lichman, Professor Fritz, Summerall, and Dr. Harless. Those are all my homies.
All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. We caught the booth on fire.